You're listening to the Omo Variety Hour on KBOO 90.7 FM. Now with us, Clayton Margreach presents the argument of David Graeber regarding the corruption of our public and private institutions by money and the resulting cynicism of the U.S. populace.
Thank you, Tom. To challenge the role of money in politics is to challenge everything. This claim is made by David Graeber in his book, The Democracy Project. The reason the claim is so radical is because our entire system of politics, governance, and work is a system of bribery. If we make this clear, then it becomes obvious that the system is utterly corrupt, and it is this system, and not just the individuals who run it, that must be challenged. I'm going to lay out Graeber's argument, quoting and paraphrasing his text. So someone might say, yes, the system that gives money, and therefore those with the most money, so much influence in politics, is corrupt. But surely it's an exaggeration to call it bribery. But when a system is corrupt, as George Orwell pointed out, those who defend it cannot call things by their proper names. By this standard, the U.S. is unusually corrupt. We maintain an empire that cannot be referred to as an empire, extracting tribute that cannot be referred to as tribute, justifying it in terms of an economic ideology, neoliberalism, we cannot refer to at all. Euphemisms and code words pervade every aspect of public debate. This is not only true of the right, with military terms like collateral damage, but on the left as well. Consider the phrase human rights abuses. Well, obviously we're all against human rights abuses, but if that's the strongest phrase you use to describe the regimes supported by our government, then we divert our attention from some harsh realities in which we are implicated. Imagine someone telling you, sometimes it's necessary to support regimes with unsavory human rights records in order to further our strategic objectives. Well, it's hard to know how to answer that. It's so vague. But suppose instead somebody told you, it is sometimes necessary to support regimes that commit acts of rape, torture, and murder in order to further our vital strategic imperatives. Well, if you heard that, you might well ask, well, are these strategic imperatives really that vital? Or you might even ask, what exactly is a strategic imperative anyway? So we come then to what Graeber calls the rape, torture, and murder test. It's quite simple, he says. When we are asked whether some government, social movement, guerrilla army, or really any organized group deserves our support or condemnation, first ask, do they commit or do they order others to commit acts of rape, torture, or murder? It seems a self-evident question, but it's surprising how rarely or selectively it is applied. Or perhaps it is surprising until one starts applying it and discovers conventional wisdom on many issues of world politics is instantly turned upside down. In 2006, for example, most people in the U.S. read about the Mexican government's sending federal troops to quell a popular revolt initiated by a teachers' union against a notoriously corrupt governor in the southern state of Oaxaca. In the U.S. media, this was universally presented as a good thing, a restoration of order. The rebels, after all, were violent, having thrown rocks and Molotov cocktails, even if they did throw them only at heavily armored riot police, causing no serious injuries. No one, to my knowledge, has ever suggested that the rebels had raped, tortured, or murdered anyone. Neither has anyone who knows anything about the events in question seriously contested the fact that forces loyal to the Mexican government had raped, tortured, and murdered quite a number of people in suppressing the rebellion. Yet somehow such acts, unlike the rebel stone-throwing, cannot be described as violent at all, let alone as rape, torture, or murder, but only appear, if at all, as accusations of human rights violations or in some similarly bloodless legalistic language. There's a similar taboo on describing the corruption of money in politics. Once upon a time, giving money to politicians to influence their positions was called bribery, and it was illegal. It was the covert giving of bags of cash in exchange for a specific political favor, like changing a zoning law or dropping the charges in a criminal case. But now, soliciting bribes has been relabeled fundraising, and bribery itself is called lobbying. Banks rarely need to ask for specific favors if politicians, dependent on the flow of bank money to finance their campaigns, are already allowing bank lobbyists to shape or even write the legislation that is supposed to regulate their banks. At this point, bribery has become the very basis of our system of government. Graeber points out that the usual line from political scientists is that these payments are not bribes unless one can prove that they changed a politician's position on a particular element of legislation. By this logic, if a politician is inclined to vote for a bill, receives money, and then changes his mind and votes against it, this is bribery. If, however, he shapes his view on the bill to begin with solely an eye for who will give money as a result, or even allows this donor's lobbyist to write the bill for him, then it's not bribery. Well, these distinctions are meaningless. The fact remains that the average senator or congressman in Washington needs to raise roughly $10,000 a week from the time they take office if they expect to be reelected, money that they raise almost exclusively from the wealthiest top half of the top 1%. So we can say that elected officials spend an estimated 30% of their time soliciting bribes. Now, once it's agreed in principle that it's okay to purchase influence, that there is nothing wrong with paying people to do and say what you like, then the morality of public life starts looking very different. Scientists can be, and regularly are, paid to come up with research that shows what food, drug, and energy companies want us to believe. Journalists can be indirectly bribed by those who advertise in their media to cover some stories and not others, and to cover them in ways favorable to those who foot the bills. In fact, to go a little beyond what Graeber writes in this place, the whole system of commodities and wages, the whole social setup that makes money the primary motive for acting, means that those with the most money, that richest half of the 1% again, run the world their way. This is the moral principle and the economic system that we on the left must directly and consciously challenge. Not Republicans and Democrats, not Boehner, McConnell, and Obama, not even Monsanto and Google. The system of money, capital, and wage labor, that's the real dark side of our world that must be exposed and abolished. I've been reading and commenting on a part of David Graeber's book, The Democracy Project, and I'm Clayton Morgeridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Thank you, Clayton.